Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. This is the audio diary of my life. Behind the scenes of YouTube creator. It's the 30th of June, 2023. It's, I don't know, something like quarter to eight this morning or something like that. In the morning, the sun is shining. There are natural clouds, or what appears to be natural clouds, in the morning. Apologies for the lack of Naked Englishman's over the last few days. I've been away to the Sounds Beautiful Festival, which was very lovely. A little less, fewer people, less attended, and fewer people on there this year. That made it quite nice for Julia and I, so we weren't quite so mobbed by wonderful people who were wanting to come over and say hello and what have you. But it was a lovely event and lovely to do it. Had a lovely time. And again, met some amazing people, learnt lots of things about all sorts of different modalities and all those sort of things. It was back at Gaunt's, is it Gaunt's? Gough's. Gaunt's House. I always get the name confused. Gaunt's House, I'm sure it was. And we stayed in the big house, and many people were camping and all that sort of thing. And having a lovely time. And then there was the fire pit. We were having cups of tea and coffee. And do you know, I didn't have any alcoholic drinks. A lot of people were drinking sort of alcohol and things. We took some farm food with us. So we were cooking up in the van just to save a bit of cash, which was good. And of course, to stay as healthy as possible. And the sun was pretty much out both days. It was lovely weather, a bit misty in the mornings, but overall it was lovely. It was, and it was I had to do a talk. I did a talk on stage on the Saturday, and then I was interviewing Bob Moran on the Sunday, and I was interviewing another chap called Robin something or other. I can't remember his last name. Who I'd never met before, but he asked if I would kind of interview him on stage. Some people prefer to have questions given to them so they can answer specific questions rather than have a talk already planned, even though they can, you know, they can, once you get them going, they can waffle on, which was great. So it was nice to be useful at the event. And so, yeah, we did that. And then we're back. We came back last night. Traffic, of course, on the way there. We went on a Friday, so the traffic was absolutely heaving. And then on the way back, of course, Sunday evening, the traffic was very, very busy. But we came back. We got back about, I don't know, half seven-ish, quarter to eight, something like that, and lit the Essie and rustled up something to eat and plonked on the sofa. And you know that strange feeling you get, I don't know whether you share the same feeling that you get when you when you've been away and you think to yourself, gosh, I've been away, but doesn't, and now I'm home, did it really happen? Did it actually happen? Yeah, that was there was a bit of that. So you know, the cat was fed and looked after by Billy, who came in each day several times, which was very kind. Just going to turn the internet on. But it was nice to have a bit of a break and get away from everything. People were very interested in the book, of course, that I'm writing. We had a bit of a discussion about that. Of course, it would be nice to have had everything already, and I could have probably sold quite a few, but unfortunately, it's not quite ready. But lots of ideas about a book tour, about selling the book, about getting the book publicised, and all of those. And it was nice to see Tess Laurie there, whose book, or the printing service, and the style of book has inspired me to follow in that direction, because it, rather than doing the Amazon version, because I think that will be very, very nice. I haven't switched on my emails. I haven't dared look, because, you know, go away for a couple of days, 3 days, and the world and their brother have emailed you. And it's very difficult to reply to everybody. So I did do a video. I'm going to have a look at it this morning. I did a video whilst we were there. And I'm not quite sure whether it was up to speed or not. It may be a bit rubbish. We were a bit tired first thing in the morning, and it's not terribly inspiring as a subject, but I may put it out. I don't know. I'll have a look and see how it came across, see if it was sufficient. It would explain my absence, I suppose, from YouTube for a couple of days. So that would be something, I guess. So, yeah, that's where we are. So we're now back and looking forward to cracking on with all the other things that we've got lined up. We've got some legal letters to write. I'm just looking here for my book on A.G. Street. Oops. There we go. We like our A.G. Street. Yes, did I tell you that we had... I can't remember if I told you that we had Lady Chatterley's Lover, the book. I bought that the other day. I saw somebody chatting about the film, and I thought, oh, it would be interesting to read the book. I can't remember if I mentioned it, so if I have, but this was... Oh, I think I did, because I think I was telling you that it was published in 1928. I do seem to remember that. Yeah, that's right. Anyway, back to A.G. Street, round the year on the farm, and we were looking at the month of October, I think. Yeah, October. It started, if you remember, talking about all of that. Shall we do a little bit more? This kind of, I thought, would be quite fun in lieu of what we were doing before when we were looking at the various diarists. Do you remember? It's nice for me to have a little focus in the show that we can return to from time to time. And we were looking at the fascinating way of getting beat to the railway. Now, you may not have thought that was terribly fascinating. Right, let's see what else it says. Well, that was October harvesting. It's interesting that this was a smallish farm. I mean, quite a big farm, but small farm. I can't remember what he had. He had about 300 acres, if I remember rightly, in Wiltshire, A.G. Street. And he, so that would be considered a small farm by commercial standards and a large farm by individual standards, I suppose. But it really and truly, it is a small to medium farm, isn't it? Medium being about 500 acres, I guess. But I would think that was quite large to, you know, in commercial terms. But... For in the old days, you'd need to have several men to look after that sort of level of fieldage, because you would have had horses and no machines back in ye old day. So it would have been a very largish farm, I suppose, because you would have to have been quite well off or earning sufficient money to be able to employ the people to do what they needed to do. Anyway, let's crack on a little bit and see what we go to now. So in early October, the farmer hurries as fast as he can to get the land ploughed and ready for wheat sowing, it says. Generally, wheat follows roots because, for reasons that will be explained, it does not do to plant the same crop on the same land in successive years. I think we mentioned that before. So now... The ploughs are busy following close behind the sheep as they eat the turnips. And when the time comes, wheat sowing begins. On free working soil, that is, soil that is not strictly having a touch of sand in them, the wheat is sown with a drill. This implement pours the wheat down, I think we read this, didn't we, down a vertical tube which has a steel shoe or disc where they meet the earth. These are called coulters. And they scuffle through the topsoil about 3 inches deep. I think we did read that. But on sticky land, and most land where the soil is all wet, the drill won't go, because the wet soil clogs up the coulters. On such land, the farm sends a presser to follow his ploughs. The presser has a huge heavy wheels, V-shaped iron tyres about 9 inches apart, and these press out little ditches in the ground and leave the surface ridged like corrugated iron. I do believe we read that as well. Then the wheat is sown with a broadcast which scatters it anyhow on the ground. As it falls and bounces, it trickles into the little ditches made by the presser. Now, we did try a bit of this broadcasting, because we were planting meadow seeds on a friend of ours's land, and we turned over the topsoil with his tractor, we didn't really plough it, did we? I can't remember what we did to it. We cut the grass, but we did do something to expose the soil.
We ploughed it.
Did we plough it? As was
per,
it a plough?
As per his request. That's what he wanted to do.
Oh, well, it was a plough?
Yep.
Oh, well, that's probably why the seeds didn't take then.
I know, we did try to explain it to him at the time.
Yeah, I can't remember it very clearly. It's a shame, isn't it?
Mm.
So we tried that, and then, of course, I guess the birds ate the seeds, the soil was dead because it had been ploughed. We've spoken about all of that and why that's not a good idea. So, of course, when we get some land and we want to plant some, say, some meadow grass, perhaps for a cow or for whatever, just to improve the soil and what have you, we'll probably mow it and let the matter, whatever is there, degrade, and we'll start to, we won't plough it. Excuse me, we won't plough it.
What we could do, because we've got plenty of lovely old books here.
Bear with me.
What we can probably do, because we've got loads of lovely old books here, is research what they used to do before the heavy ploughs.
Yes.
So, and do
well,
that.
Ploughing had been going on since the adopt, but the ploughs were much, much shallower.
Yes, I mean, the horse-drawn ploughs didn't dig in very much, and that was almost ideal.
Yeah.
But it was the start of going the wrong way.
But, I mean, you just really want the topsoil to die, don't you, and then harrow it, where you kind of level it out, and turf on your dead matter from horses and cows and pigs and all of that, and spread your muck. And, the no dig. And also, you need roots in the ground all the time, so you don't dig up the roots. I mean, this is what we've been reading in various new books, people like Joe Salatin and what was the other chap? Somebody Brown.
I can never remember the other
one. Who's, he's... And, I mean, the message there, and I think even old Graham Harvey was talking about, you've got to have roots in the ground. If you take the roots out of the ground has no life in terms of plant life in it. And the roots are the things that go down and suck up the water and moisten it and bring the mycorrhizae, or whatever it's called.
Connect
everything together. So, and also, of course, if you can mow and clear the surface, but you don't want to lose the roots. And then when you've got your crop, whatever it is, you feed that, so that becomes the dominant plant, and then the other stuff will just die away or be very small matter. Anyway, so what we're reading here is the beginning. Well, you know, this is the turning point of farming, where it starts to go a bit wrong, because they're ploughing as they have done, but we know that ploughing is wrong. So it was just that deeper and deeper ploughing, and of course people got very, it was pride on having the straightest, nicest ploughed fields, but they're just going back to this idea of just one crop in one bit of land, and you want multiple crops in there, until they started doing mixed crops, didn't they? And they would have certain crops in with another crop, like clover in with a certain crop. But then you see they're doing it on an industrial scale, and that we've got to get out of that. We've just got to get away from the industrial scale and have more farms around towns and things, get more smaller farms and thousands of them. It's what we need, in my humble opinion. Anyway, so we read various bits here. In October, wheat plants will peep through in about 10 days from sowing. But even during such short time, the birds flock down and eat the, so you need a scarecrow. 50 years ago, this work was done by a boy. Oh, yeah, I remember reading that, of course. And he was known as a bird starver. His wage was a shilling a week. Now the work is done by a kind of firework. Oh, yeah, just to scare them off. But what is the good of getting your land ploughed up ready for wheat sowing if you haven't arranged to have some seed wheat to sow? It's best not to sow your own seed. Oh, yes, we didn't. Sorry, I've read all of this. So you'd go elsewhere for yourself. So, having hauled the threshing machine... Oh, hang on a minute. For threshing... Have I just skipped a few pages? Sorry, I feel like I've skipped a few pages here. Even if you do this, some other farmer will want to buy your... You know. For threshing, you must have a fine day. Otherwise, when you take off the cover of thatch from the rick, all its contents were exposed in the rain. Moreover, when the big belt that connects the engine to the threshing machine gets wet, it loses its grip on the pulley wheels and slips off onto the ground. So, yeah, so you want a fine day when you're threshing. So having hauled the threshing machine in between the two chosen wheat ricks a day or two before, the farmer gets up extra early one morning, taps his weather glass, reckons it's going to be a fine day and decides to go threshing. On most farms, this is a job for the whole staff and more. For the minimum threshing gang is 9 men. Imagine that. Two pitch, I'm repeating myself here because I'm trying to make sense of this sentence. Two pitch the sheaves from the corn rick on the top of the machine. There, one man cuts the string, the other feeds the sheaves into the thresher. On the ground, one man puts on an empty corn sack, the other takes it away, weighs and ties the full ones, while another does much the same with the chaff bags. Then two more men are needed to build the straw rick, and the other to drive the machine and look after the machinery. Blimey, this is a full-on job, isn't it? At about 7 in the morning, the two corn rick men put up the ladder against the rick. They climb up onto the roof, strip off the thatch. Others pile this out of the way of the machine. Others attach the corn sacks and chaff bags to the proper spouts, while the engine driver has a last look round with the oil can. If he has a steam engine, he lit his fire to get the steam up at least an hour before. But if he has an internal combustion tractor, then all he need do is swing the starting handle when the time comes. At about 7:30, all is ready to start threshing, and the big belt begins to move. It tightens, clamps once or twice, and soon the rich hum of the drum of the threshing machine fills the air. The topmost sheaves are rolled down the sloping roof of the rick onto the top of the thresher. Their strings are cut, and into the drum they go. Soon the grain comes down to shoot into the waiting sack. The chaff bags begin to fill. The thresh straw moves steadily up the elevator, and a fine dust fills the air all round the scene of activity. I'll leave it there, but yes, that's a very beautiful image, isn't it, of these men hard-working, dressed respectfully in their suits and waistcoats and ties and whatever. You know, you see these pictures, don't you? Working around on the land with the old ricks instead of the bales that they have these days, threshing the wheat. And just to think, really, that's an image from, well, from 100 years ago, and how it's changed so rapidly in 100 years. 100 years does not seem that long to me. It's a lifetime. It's a very long-lived life, isn't it? But it is a lifetime, and in a lifetime so much has changed, and not necessarily for the better. I'm not saying that that was ideal work or even enjoyed. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but it was certainly done. But there would have been an element of camaraderie before and after, and a sense of purpose amongst nine men working on the fields, knowing what they have to do and the importance of it in order to get food and to have a living. And now, of course, we're so disconnected with the land. We're so disconnected. A solitary man with headphones on, listening to Spotify, with a GPS machine guiding the machine to do what it needs to do. And or if it's a combine harvester type thing, you know, two men driving along in parallel, guided by GPS, so that they don't really have any skill sets anymore. They're not having to think anymore. They're just there. Could be done by robots, probably will be done by robots on the big commercial things. And what a great shame that is. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I have to say that we come to the end of today's episode. I hope it wasn't too full of farming stuff. But we're back. We're back. And I will talk to you tomorrow. Until then, take care. Look after yourself. Bye for now.